The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
Live from the Space Talk Radio Studios, it's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting live to four continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy, here's the founder and host of The Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this special edition Space Show program. Thank you very much for tuning in. A couple of quick announcements and then on with our program. First of all, let me give you the call-in and chat and email information for those of you who want to participate in the program. The toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Remember that there are no call screeners. Let the phone ring until we can answer it and then be patient until we can bring you up on air. For those of you that work with chat from Instant Messenger, ICQ, or CompuServe, the screen name is the same for all three, space, show, chat, one word. And then the three email addresses that you can use to reach us with your questions and comments, dmlivings@yahoo.com, drspace@thespaceshow.com, and thespaceshow@gmail.com. Check out our newsletter, thespaceshow.com. The comprehensive one is there, upgraded every Monday, and as needed during the week. It shows our programming through into next year already, and also you'll find special announcements there. And it's also updated as necessary. If you want the short email version, just send a note to Dr. Space at thespaceshow.com. All of our programs are archived. This one will be up on archives and podcasting later this evening. Visit our Space Show store when you get a chance. And clearly, we appreciate the help of all of you who click on the Support the Space Show button. As I say, each program, it really is a big undertaking to become spacefaring. And doing this show is no small part of that big undertaking. So I do appreciate those of you that help out and encourage all of you to do so. And those that are interested in becoming spacefaring, they thank you as well. Don't forget that The Space Show is a registered trademark and service mark for me, David Livingston. We do thank, as always, the great podcasting guy, Gigadial.net, and Andrew for their free service. Couldn't do it without them. Special reminder, keep saving that date, everyone. May 4th through May 7th, 2006, at the Sheraton Hotel in Los Angeles for the 25th Annual International Space Development Conference with the National Space Society. I hope to be doing a live show there, and we certainly hope to see all of you there. And then don't forget that our Send a Message to Deep Space Communication program is about to choose a December winner. If you want to get your message into the contest on what you want to say out into deep space, check it out. It's a link at the top of the website. And if you have any questions, give me a call. The last little piece of announcements to make is if you're interested in using the Space Show on a phone, cell phone, any kind of phone, wherever you are, let me know if you would like that service. It would be a toll call for you, the user. I'd be happy to set that up if I get enough people that are interested to, you know, make it desirable and attractive for Space Show listeners. So, again, let me know if that's a service that you would like. Well, listeners, I am truly honored and really humbled to have the guest on with us tonight, Dr. Barbara Max Hubbard. I can't tell you how I've been looking forward to this show. This is part of our longstanding series on the Space Show called Our Spiritual Connection to Outer Space. Dr. Hubbard is an author, public speaker, social innovator, and president of the Foundation for Conscious Evolution. She has initiated a guided educational program supported by internet systems called Gateway to Conscious Evolution, offering a new development path toward the next stage of human evolution and reaches now over 1,000 people. And she is creating a new vehicle, the Communication of Pioneering Souls, to connect the large group of evolving humans now arising in every culture field and tradition. And I can read and read and read about her probably for the rest of the evening. Her credits, her accomplishments are just incredible. Her books, she is so well known. Go visit www.barbaramarkshubbard.com and read her bio there, or read it on the spaceshow.com site. I would really rather talk to Barbara Hubbard than read about her. And welcome to the Space Show. I'm truly honored to have you as a guest.
Thank you, David.
I met you because at the end of a Space Frontier Foundation meeting in October, Steve Wolf and some others arranged a meeting with you in Santa Barbara to take getting into space and settling the space frontier to a new level and a new direction with new partners away from the space community. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how this fits into your overall conscious evolution programming?
Well, just starting way back when the space program, like when John Glenn went into space and when the Apollo program came, I was in my early 30s. And I had an immediate awareness that this was an evolutionary phenomenon. I compared it to the fish coming out of the ocean onto the dry land, and I could see that we were going to be born as a universal species, that we were literally penetrating the blue cocoon of Earth, and we would be an Earth-space species. And I could see the meaning of the space program beyond all the obvious technological, commercial, military, was actually evolutionary. And I had a partner who was in the Air Force, John Whiteside, and together we began to see that if we, this was like early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, if we chose a goal, like the first lunar settlement, if the United States initiated that goal to build a new world, starting a new world in space, and also do it for the benefit of Earth to a maximum degree, that we would have initiated the next stage of our physical and social evolution. So in the 70s, we did many conferences called SynCons, for Synergistic Convergence, and we brought together space leaders and welfare mothers and black power leaders and ambassadors to look at what would be the effect on their concerns if there were a long-range evolutionary cooperative goal to establish the first settlement on the moon, and beyond that to establish the whole environment for humanity in outer space. And every single time, it appeared to be of benefit to people who were not at all interested in space. Like ambassador from Bangladesh said to me, if something like this doesn't happen, there's no chance for our people. And people who were left out of the system, who tend to resist the space program, saw that it would stimulate the economy, that it would create more jobs, more education for the people, not the most privileged, but the ones left out. And so we learned how to communicate long-range space goals as an evolutionary social imperative.
So your approach is to make it very, very inclusive, which to me is the only natural way we're ever going to get anything done in space and what this radio program is all about. It's been years since you had those first SynComs. Why do you think we've been delayed, and what can we do to circumvent these delays? Because we need it now more than ever before.
Well, you see, that's such a good question, and I think that's how this new group came together with me. The way it happened really is so often by accident. I met a young man called Stephen Wolf, who'd written a beautiful article about conscious evolution and the meaning of space. So I saw him in Washington, and we had lunch, and I told him about the idea that if you want to get a lot of support for space goal, you have to show how it affects environment, health, education, economics, and other needs, or people will resist it. And he was very excited, and then he told me that there was this meeting, I guess it was the Space Frontier Foundation.
Right.
In Los Angeles a couple of weekends ago, and he invited all the space pioneers, as I call them, to my house, and I literally had not been involved in the space movement for 30 years. Because, to answer your question, after all these efforts that I and so many other people made to have a citizen-sponsored space movement, to have citizen participation in space, what happened was that space really was closed. It wasn't possible to do the citizen part of it. At that time, I worked with Jerry O'Neill, you know, and the idea of human habitats in space and L5 vibration point. There was a whole movement. But I think when Reagan came in, the idea of missile defense systems came in, and the people were excluded, and the space program was supported. Also, I think NASA lost its mission. Once we landed on the moon, they didn't have what I would consider to be the proper mission. And the proper mission is really not just to go to the moon or go to Mars. The proper mission is an Earth-space integrated scenario that would lead to an immeasurable future for humanity. And space is essential for that. But nobody except Kraft Ehrke and a few authors who are not very well known have really said the meaning of space at a time when we have a closed system here on Earth, overpopulating, polluting. We have to control growth here. We have to restore this environment. But if we don't also have a place to explore, to move, and develop, the human race is going to be trapped. And that the point of our space development has not been well made. And there are many individuals who understand it, but as a movement, it hasn't gelled yet. So what happened at my house, it was like a catalytic event, because I asked everybody, what was your aspiration? Why do you think we should do this? Everybody, whatever their different opinions were, had a very deep sense of the evolutionary destiny of humanity, needing to have humans in space, needing to have an expanded environment. And so the group, more or less spontaneously, created something called the Committee for a Positive Future and began to work on a statement of what the group would be for, with the possibility of doing some synergistic convergence events at the appropriate time.
You know, it's so interesting, because I have been saying almost since the beginning of doing this show, going back close to 5 years now, that we don't tell the right story, and that NASA doesn't tell the right story, and we don't connect with people outside the space community for the most part. And a lot of listeners don't know it, but I am changing around the space show early next year. And I have created a space educational foundation that's really kind of different than others, but it's designed to tell a different story to the general public, and it's designed to be funded by educational foundation funders,
yes.
not anything to do with space. And I'm making the case that you just made over the last few minutes, that this is the path to how you do things for the betterment of humanity. And it amazes me that when the president announced his vision, he didn't speak in this sense. He didn't connect any dots for the general public.
No, I mean, you just say, well, we're going to go to Mars or we're going to go to the moon, and you hear we are starving on Earth. It seems ridiculous. Unless you show that the time has come for an Earth-based integrated scenario.
Well, and so many people are on this show talking about potential energy solutions from space to our energy problems. And I ask these people all the time, why don't we hear space as a route for resolving our energy problems, from the people saying and telling us daily, we have an energy problem? It happened again last night with a guest from Boeing who was on. There aren't any good answers to this, and this is why I'm so enthusiastic about what you're doing, what this group is doing, and how to reach out and connect and make some new friends way outside the space community.
Well, one of the ideas that I suggested is that instead of starting with some kind of big conference, is that we start with a design team, not only just the space people, but maybe someone from environment, someone from health, someone from spiritual, to give the framework of positive, long-range Earth-based human development. What if we said within 30 years we would like to have X done, and that it would have this effect on immediate needs, or this effect on environment, this effect on energy, and so on, and that it would lead to an open future? And I suggest that we create a small team to do that, and then do a presentation at the World Future Society, and invite participation in helping to develop a positive scenario for our country and world. Right now there is no positive scenario being offered.
That's for sure.
And so I thought maybe the Committee for a Positive Future could take step one, would be a design team, as to not, but there'll be a lot of differences of opinion, but what are the major ways of doing this to be of maximum benefit to humanity, as well as opening that frontier for human development. And presented in Toronto in 2006, and then possibly in 2007 at the World Future Society, have a large SynCon event where people looked at this scenario and started to help say, how would this work better? How will this affect my interest? It gets some participation like that.
I want to go back to basics, because I have a question by email from Wayne in Norman, Oklahoma, who says, please, before you get too much further into the program, for those of us like myself who don't know what conscious evolution means, please ask your guest to define it for us.
Oh, yes, of course. Conscious evolution is the evolution of evolution from unconscious to conscious choice. And conscious evolution of consciousness has been going on, you know, from single cells, multi-cells, animals, humans. But it was only since we began to understand nature, the atom, the gene, the brain, and gained the power to destroy and create at such a scale that we had to be conscious that we are evolving, conscious that there is an evolutionary process, and conscious that we have some responsibility of guiding that process toward a positive future. And you can see with the environmental problem particularly and global warming that if we don't practice conscious evolution in our use of fossil fuels, we could destroy our life support system. So conscious evolution is just noticing that we're affecting evolution and choosing to be conscious about it. And it has three elements. There is self and spiritual conscious evolution, in which you feel yourself evolving into closer union with the transcendent, the divine. Conscious evolution has a social aspect, which is helping to design a better world where systems are breaking down, where people are starving and so forth. How do we handle that? That's social conscious evolution. And then scientific technological conscious evolution is to guide our immense powers of science and technology to life-oriented purposes.
Is there an action plan that someone comes away with, or what is the outcome, and how do they affect change, or is it through group togetherness?
Well, there's several ways. Basically, we're an educational foundation, and our purpose is to educate people in their own responsibility for self and social evolution. And the way we do that is through my book, through Gateway to Conscious Evolution, our educational program, through a membership group on my website called The Evolutionary Edge, which people could join for $9.95 a month and be in constant touch with these ideas. and conferences and speeches. So we are mainly an educational organization.
You have two websites. I gave out BarbaraMarksHubbard.com. Is that the one you're talking about? Or?
Yes. And then there's another one, which is www.evolve.org.
To join for roughly $10 a month, which what, is
BarbaraMarksHubbard.com.
And is that up and running now or about to be? Or
it's up and running now, and if you click on it, you will see my picture there, and then you will also see in the right-hand corner the Evolutionary Edge. If you click on that, you'll be invited to be a member.
And it's open to anybody?
Yes.
Okay.
And there's also information about Gateway on my website. So if you click on Gateway, you will be shifted to the Evolve website, and you'll be able to take a tour of Gateway. And Gateway is a developmental path that shows the whole, that places human evolution in the whole story of evolution. You know, we come from cosmogenesis. We come from billions of years. And now we are consciously participating in creation. That's what we're doing.
What is the most effective way you have found to spread the word, to get other people interested?
I think, you know, I have to say, David, I've been disappointed about any genuine effectiveness on the political economic scale of these kinds of things. What has happened is a community of pioneering souls has formed, and people who understand this, but who at this stage don't have much political power. And when you try to get into the political system with this, even Denis Kucinich, you know, wanted to, I think it was to prevent weapons in space, he had a very hard time being heard about it. So I'm disappointed in myself and others like me, because I think we have the most vital idea on Earth, and I don't, you know, I'm so glad you do this space program. In fact, you see, I had more or less given up and turned to spiritual and social evolution, which we can do, because I didn't know how to do more in space until Stephen Wolf brought me together with these space groups. And I just mentioned my own story and frustration, and out of that, this Committee for a Positive Future formed that's very new. And, I mean, my contribution in the 70s, I initiated a project called Harvest Moon, which was, I went to NASA and asked Wernher von Braun if the citizens could rent a Saturn V rocket, and that we would bring back 400 pounds of moon rock, and Harry Winston, the jeweler, said he would pay $400 million for it. And we almost did it, but NASA stopped us. They wouldn't let us do it, but we had astronauts. We had Dr. Thomas Paine as an advisor. We were going to involve people in supporting an aspect of the space program, but NASA wouldn't let us. They were bureaucratic. They were afraid of any kind of intrusion. And the political system stopped it, and I think our whole political system in this country has not been evolutionary. It's been reactionary.
No, and it's manipulative and controlling, and so this would be a huge threat to the government, let alone to NASA, if people actually had the ability to do what you were going to do back with Harvest Moon.
I know, and you know, we thought we were so innocent. We had all these astronauts volunteering, and we had an experiment somebody designed for how things would grow on the moon.
Uh-huh.
And we were on the radio selling subscription tickets. And you see, people love space. Look at the excitement with the Apollo program and the lunar landing. It was a planetary high moment. And they intuitively knew it was important. But our government dropped the ball terribly. And I remember Tom Paine told me about NASA, that during Apollo, they had a mission. And if you went into the NASA, you would see this poster. It was an astronaut stepping on the moon, and underneath it said, "Bring him back alive." So everybody at NASA was concerned about bringing that astronaut back alive. So they told me that a janitor could get to Wernher von Braun if he saw something was going wrong. people self-corrected. There was a great esprit. After Apollo, they had no mission, and NASA did not put forward a mission equal to that potential. I was a student of Kraft Ehrke, who is a very powerful space scientist. He was head of Rockwell International Space Science, and he called it the extraterrestrial imperative. And there was a lot of understanding of the next phase of the Industrial Revolution in an Earth-space scenario. And I think NASA dropped the ball, the government dropped the ball, and the citizen space movement was weak. We had no support. And it was one of those evolutionary windows that closed. And I'm very grateful, even, you know, to... I'm 76 years old, and I don't know if I'm going to get to the moon, David, but I still care.
Well, it's what we do for those that come after us, which is the way humanity works at its best anyway.
Yes, of course. I'm just joking.
No, I know.
But I wanted to tell you, with Dr. Tom Paine, we went out for dinner one night, and we made a date that we were going to have a glass of wine on the moon together. Of course, he died, and that's not what I'm going to do, but you know, whatever I can do in the way of education and speaking, and I think putting a positive scenario together and beginning to present it would be very valuable.
I do too, and you know, I'm just to be cynical. I'm not so sure the government dropped the ball. I'm more of the inclination that they want us to believe they dropped the ball. I've often said that after reading Frank White's great book, The Overview Effect,
yeah, that was great.
That if there ever was a conspiracy around, it would be to keep the masses out of space because of the transformative nature of what happens. Because once that starts happening on a large scale, the existing power structures and ways of doing things on this planet are going to perish, and they're not going to be able to withstand that transformative nature and power that Frank so well documented in his book.
I think that's true.
And I think there are people that know that. And I think that they're really afraid that if enough of us get into space and have the overview effect or experience what you're talking about, it's going to be curtains for their little manipulative games of power and money and energy and shortages and
fear. You know what's
fear.
So interesting is that the game of power, domination, and control with a peak oil situation is threatened right now. There's a threat to the continuation of economic growth and the whole growth scenario based on fossil fuels. So something... 30 years later now, there is a radical change in the set of problems that we're facing. And I don't think the current governments can handle them, whether it be the United States or China. They're all hell-bent on economic growth no matter what. Now, nature is going to kick back somehow here.
Well, I think it already is.
And when we get a few more tidal waves and coastal cities start to go under and there's no water in vital areas, unfortunately, crisis precedes transformation so often in evolution, and it appears that the human species in the power-oriented mode will not do this voluntarily.
It's almost like we have to go to a 12-step program and stand up and say we're ready, right?
I think there has to be the people who have an evolutionary, spiritual-based, humanitarian consciousness have to somehow connect the positive consciousness and creativity to take leadership on this earth. And I mean, how much of a breakdown we have to have, because if it goes too chaotic and too much of a breakdown, then we lose a lot of possibilities. It's like right now, the next 10 years, it seems to me, are very, very critical.
This is our opportunity period.
Yes, I think so. Because if the environmental collapse that's being foreseen actually happens, it's going to be harder and harder to get into space.
Absolutely, if the economic collapse has happened, if we are unsuccessful at making the